you think of LSU head coach Ed Orgeron, what comes to your mind?
I would use the word blessed.
When they use the term somebody you want in your foxhole, that's somebody you want in your foxhole.
Motivator. He can motivate a statue.
During our time in Lafayette, Lake Charles, and his hometown of LaRose, we got to know the real Ed Orgeron, and we learned that he's all that and more. This is Al Blanton with Saturday Down South. Welcome to our new podcast series called Stories Down South.
I feel at home, I feel comfortable. I know what they expect. I know what they like, speak their language, eat their food. I'm family. I mean, we're all family. You know, I always wanted to be the head coach at LSU so I can represent these people.
Yeah.
I know how hard they work. I know what good families they are. And I know how much LSU means to them.
Our first stop was in Lafayette, where Orgeron was scheduled to speak at an event called the Tiger Tour. The Tiger Tour gives the head coach an opportunity to travel from city to city and speak to fans. After he was hired as the head coach in Baton Rouge, in order to further ingratiate himself with the LSU faithful, Orgeron made the decision to resurrect the tour. As we walked in, we were ushered to a press room where we waited for the arrival of Coach O. TV reporters were making notes and preparing their questions. Finally, Coach O walked in. Many of the other reporters had questions about the current state of affairs at LSU.
Hey, Coach, can you kind of talk about Tyler Shelvin a little?
Yes.
Coach, following up on Arden Key, what you said a couple of days ago, can you just tell us about, you know, your hopes for his timetable?
But we were trying to discover Orgeron, the man. Some outside the state of Louisiana believe that Orgeron is more like a caricature than the real thing, that he's built a coaching career out of a Cajun persona.
Coach O rips his shirt off, and this is what he says.
But as we found, this is no ruse. Orgeron is authentic.
One thing I'm proud of Tyler Shelvin is he got all the way up to 383. And I told his grandma to start feeding him gumbo with no rice. He was calling me, he said, Coach, you're killing me. I need more rice.
LaRose, Louisiana rests on a patch of bayou just before the land falls off into the Gulf of Mexico. This town of 7,400 is bisected by Bayou Lafourche, a tributary that methodically runs north to New Orleans. In LaRose, most of the economy is built around water.
That's almost the main, besides the oil industry, is shrimping.
Yeah, besides the
crabbing,
oil shrimping, it's probably the...
Yeah, seafood and oil industry is the biggest thing.
The second source of income over here on this bayou.
Drawbridges connect the land. Shrimp boats, trawlers, even businesses are often perched on the riverbanks. Two highways run parallel to Bayou Lafourche, and a panoramic view of the city can be seen as the large overpass sweeps over the city below. If there is such thing as Cajun country, this is it. A French influence is evident in the names and the accents. While I was in LaRose, the residents helped me brush up on my Cajun French.
What are all, let's go one by one.
Crab is the crab. Shrimp is chevrette, crawfish is décrevisse, a oyster is rit, a poisson is a fish.
This is a town that encourages hard work and doesn't discourage a good time. A place where seafood, cold beer, and Catholic mass can coexist. And in 2017, it's perhaps best known as the birthplace of Ed Orgeron.
Really, it started in the backyard playing football. All the neighbors would come over. We'd play football from 7 in the morning till 12, go eat and play from 1 till they called us back in for supper. I mean, and we became friends. My mom and dad would always cook. Guys would always come over to the house on Saturday mornings after the game, the fellowship, all the things together that we did together. We made it life fun down there. I mean, as you know, there's not a lot of things to do in LaRose, Louisiana, but we made it fun, and we always wanted to compete to win.
One of those friends was Brian Arsenault, who had been close to Orgeron since childhood. The two of them grew up together, and Arsenault learned what Orgeron, or Bebe, as his friends called him, was all about.
I would say he is exactly what Cajun heritage is all about. You know, the hard work, never quit. And I can tell you back, he's done every type of job you can name, from him and I shovel shrimp in shrimp sheds for summers for $5 an hour. We planted grass on a Grand Isle beach working summer jobs. We dug ditches. He's dug ditches for his dad. And, you know, he's just done everything. And he just doesn't know. I guess some people would say you're not smart enough to know when to quit.
In LaRose, life was lived at the intersection of hard work and football. At least for Ed Ogeron, it was.
How big is high school football in LaFouche Parish?
In LaFouche Parish, in the time that, at our era, it was extremely big. Sellout stadiums, sellout games. You know, we had several district championships. I can't quote exactly how many, but it was back to back. 71, we won state at one level, and 77, we won state again at another level, at the highest level. And Ed was on those teams that, not only that, teams that lost in semifinals, Ed was on as a starter also. So football has always been the passion of South Louisiana in this parish since I've grown up.
The team was small in numbers, but each member of the team possessed a bayou grit that led the Tarpons to a state championship in 1977. The two best players were a quarterback named Bobby Hebert and a defensive lineman named Ed Ogeron. Each would leave their mark in Louisiana sports history. Hebert would go on to quarterback the New Orleans Saints for 7 years, while Ogeron chose to stick with the college game. But in 77, they were just two high school kids playing for the love of the game. Kevin Groh, a high school teammate of both Hebert and Ogeron, has fond memories of this time.
When we won the state championship, that was incredible. It was one of the biggest things that had ever happened to the Bayou. We only had 34 guys on a team dressed out, and we won the state championship.
But Ogeron wasn't just a jock. Off the field, everybody loved him. Joanne, a pot cook at Cash Magic Diner in LaRose, went to high school with Ogeron, and she says that he was friendly to his classmates when he wasn't in football mode.
He was pretty much like almost a jokester. He was used to make everybody laugh, and, you know, all his friends liked him.
And the ladies loved Bebe, according to Groh.
So was he a ladies' man back in the day?
Oh, we all were.
The legend of Coach O began at South LaFouche, where Bebe was the big man on campus. He was an all-around athlete, but it was evident that his heart was set on football. The people of the Bayou would soon start noticing. Ogeron was good enough to play for LSU, where he committed that spring. But after only a short time in Baton Rouge, he discovered that life had other plans. He became disillusioned and homesick and returned home to LaRose, where he went to work installing roadside power poles with his father.
You know, I don't know if you know the story about he went to LSU for 2 weeks. He got a scholarship and went on, and after 2 weeks he quit. He was lonesome. He was homesick. So he went home, and next thing he was doing was working on the side of the road with his dad with a phone company.
Things might have gone on like that had fate not intervened.
He didn't like some of the comments people made and this and that, and he got a phone call from Bobby Hebert to go to Northwestern, and he went up there with Bobby.
Ogeron may have come from the Bayou, but he wanted more. He had seen many a childhood dream washed up on the shores of Bayou LaFouche, but he knew that wasn't to be his destiny.
Yeah, he didn't want to be there. He didn't want to, you know, just live on a bayou and have to start at the bottom and, you know, not have education. So he wanted to get his education and then play football. So he went up to Northwestern and did real well.
While in college, the legend of Ogeron only grew. Two of his friends, Brian Arsenault and John Fallbacher, also known as Squat, have plenty of stories from their glory days. One word that remained constant when we talked to Ogeron's friends was intense. He would never sit still.
No matter what we did, Bebe could get everybody fired up in an instant. And you know, and he called it the goosebumps. In French, they call it the frissons. I mean, just talking, you mention his name, you know, you get him, you get goosebumps because you know what's about to happen. Anything you do is just maxed out.
The three friends were teammates at Northwestern State, and from the start, they formed an inseparable bond. Nacogdoches, located in northern Louisiana, was 4.5 hours away from home, and often the trio of Cajuns felt a bit ostracized.
Were you guys almost outsiders growing up there?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And we were treated like that. And, you know, we had a lot more to prove than up there because, you know, they recruited mainly up in the northern area, the schools up there, you know, North Texas, Arkansas, northern Mississippi. So, you know, we were like outsiders coming in. You had to prove yourself. And, you know, one thing at practice, it was probably the first week of spring practice, you know, A.O. Williams stood up in front of everybody and says, not one person has beat Ed Ogeron on any given play in the first week. And that stayed through the whole spring practice.
Football is the great equalizer. If you can play, nothing else matters. And Ed could play. On the field, he was like a tornado of energy that inspired teammates to match his level of intensity.
As a player, he was that leadership I'm telling you about. Mm-hmm. When he was on the field, it was mean. It was tough. It was no quit. It was he made it fun when he was in the game, and then for me, and I'm speaking my part is that I know all other teammates the same way. When he's on the field with the confidence factor, he just didn't know when to quit.
And off the field, his larger than life personality made for some enduring tales.
Yeah, he talked a lot of bull and a lot of smack to the other team, and did that with us. I mean, I remember one game specifically, and I mentioned that in the CBS thing. Him and I had during the summer messed around with another university's cheerleaders and had fun. And so come time for the season, her boyfriend, one of the girls' boyfriend, was on the other team. And I was actually going against him, and Ed would call him out. Baby would call him out and say, hey, 62, hey, you know, Arsenal, he messed with your girlfriend all summer. And I was like, come on, baby, come on, man. The guy's going to want to kill me. And he would want to intimidate the other team to make that guy want to kill me because he knew I had to get off my ass and kill him. So it was funny, but that's the kind of guy he was.
Ed's hyper-competitive nature filtered over into other sports as well. If it had a score, Ogeron was going to find a way to win.
I remember Bebe. You know, I was like 218 pounds in college, and Bebe was about, what, 250? You know, and he's big, and he's a defensive lineman. I'm a defensive back. You know, I'm more athletic than him, just assuming. So he goes, you know, and my nickname in college was Squat, Johnny Squat. And I don't know how that came about, but... you know, he goes, let's go play tennis. I said, you can't play tennis against me. You're a big lineman. He goes, okay, come on. We started to play tennis. He started hitting aces, and I couldn't return his serves. I'm like, this big old guy can play tennis? And he's smoking me. And finally, I just gave up. I said, dude, this is dangerous. But he's just drilling me with balls.
For guys like Squat, just the mere presence of Ogeron was enough to get him fired up. He was a natural leader, and he never let his friends sit around or get complacent.
When we used to go places and I'd show up and I'd see him, we'd see one another shoot 30, 40 feet away. First thing we'd do, we'd go, he'd get on all fours, I'd get on all fours, and we'd go at it. Bam! Wherever we walked, restaurants, weddings, anything. When people saw me and him in the same room, they knew it was about to happen. And we'd sit there and just bang, bang, keep hitting until somebody just, okay, that's enough. But, I mean, we'd have knots, bruises, cuts. You know, and I'm just a little bitty old guy, but, you know, I was like him intense. We just keep pounding, pounding. And that's how his life was. You don't come against him because he's going to weigh you out. He's not going to stop.
Once his time as a player at Northwestern was finished, Ogeron stuck around as a grad assistant. It was then that Arsenault, who was still on the team, got his first taste of Coach Ed Orgeron. It quickly became clear to him that Bebe was destined for greatness.
One season, he was a grad coach, got a chance to coach me. It was the greatest thing. We were playing, I could tell you one story that just being the friendship we were playing against Southern Miss. Southern Miss had us for their homecoming, and we were 1AA college. They were the big school. We go to coach him, go to play him, and Bebe walks up to me before the game. He says, "Hey, Butch, you better get your ass ready. That's some big son of bitches out there." You know, he's a man. He looked like a forest of 6'7", 6'8", and here I am, barely 6 foot tall. And my knees are rattling. He says, "You better get your ass ready." And that's the relationship we had, him and I. And we ended up winning that game 22-0, and they had Southern Miss had 4 yards total offense, our defense. But he was the one that just kind of got our motors going.
It was through coaching that Orgeron would go from a hometown hero to a national talking point. When Ed Orgeron addressed his team for the first time, Kevin Groh knew there was something unique and perhaps a little crazy about Orgeron.
This is the first time he gave a motivational speech. He was at Northwestern High School, or at Northwestern State University, and the head coach told him, he says, "You got to give a motivational speech to these guys." Okay. So after practice, everybody gathered around, and Coach O started telling a story about these two guys going fishing on a cold winter day. So they got there and sat on the side of a riverbank on each a bucket with a bucket between them. And they're fishing. One guy's catching fish. Another guy ain't catching no fish. So he starts wondering. So he asks the other guy, he says, "Man," he said, what's going on here? You know, he says, "I'm looking at you." He says, "We got the same pole, same line, same cork, same hook, using the same worms." I said, what's going on here? He says, "I'm not catching no fish." He said, "I'm putting my line right next to yours." He said, "Well, let me tell you something." He says, "I do whatever it takes to feed my family." And he pulled the worm out of his mouth. And he says, "I'll warm mine before I put it on that hook." He had the worm the whole time he was telling the speech in his mouth.
Wait, Ed Orgeron?
Ed Orgeron had that worm in his mouth.
While he was giving this motivational speech?
Yeah. He says, this is exact words. In other words, "I do whatever it takes to feed my family." He says, "You grab that worm and you take him straight out the bucket." He says, "I'll warm mine up before I put him on the hook."
His persona was perfect for the trenches, for leading a group of men in a gridiron battle. And all of his friends say that it didn't stop when he came off the field.
You know, for my, wedding, he, everybody's getting together and, you know, everybody's taking their time. And, he's the first one dressed. He's almost like in football mentality. He's firing everybody up. It's like we're playing a football game and we're getting ready for a wedding. And so we get in the limo and we get to the church and we at the church and, you know, he's down on all fours and just getting everybody. And we're getting ready to go into church for a wedding, calm. He's got everybody ripped up like we're going to play a football game. I said, "B, we're going into a church. You got to calm down." And it was pretty intense in the church, too. Man, it was like, you know, he's like he's ready to play a football game. So, you know, that's a funny story because the priest came outside and he looked when we got out the limo and he got scared and ran back into church. And I'm like, "Dude, we got to calm him down." But you know, it's no calming him down. He controls himself when he needs to, but when it's time to go, it's time to go.
After graduating from Northwestern State, Orgeron's coaching journey took him literally all over the United States. Along the way, he made stops in McNeese State, Arkansas, Miami, Nicholls State, Syracuse, and USC, falling under the tutelage of coaching mentors like Ken Hatfield, Jimmy Johnson, Paul Pasqualoni, and Pete Carroll. Along his many stops, Bebe brought a little slice of the bayou with him, and his hometown supported him as he traveled across the country.
And, you know, I've kept my accent, as you guys know, everywhere I went. But everywhere I went, I've related to the things that I learned home from my parents, things I learned home from the community, how proud we were. We're proud to be Cajuns, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Very few people leave a place like La Rose. And so when Ogeron came back home from Syracuse or Miami, it was always something to behold. And he would often bring mementos of his coaching life.
We followed him from all those years at USC, Syracuse, Miami. You know, like when he would come home, it was like, you know, he had a T-shirt and had Miami Hurricanes on. I'm like, you want that T-shirt? I said, yeah, but that's extra large. I said, you can fit it. You can fit it. So, you know, stuff like that, you know, I look forward, you know, just a T-shirt. Not big to anybody else, but for me, it was, you know, it was a big thing. You know, who else is going to get a Miami Hurricane T-shirt from down here?
Wherever Ogeron went, one theme stayed the same. Players loved him, and he got the absolute best out of them. For them, Coach O's infectious spirit, his love for the game, and his hyper-competitive nature translated into success on the field. Brian Arsenault says that playing for Ogeron was one of the best experiences of his life.
That leadership role, you can't, as a player, you know it right away. People know it when people are leaders, and people know when people are followers. And in no way, shape, or form, you can get it confused. He's a leader. And so as a coach, he does the same thing he did as a player, as a coach, and then then it feeds back to his players. His players thrive off of that leadership. They're starving for that success, and he's there and could get it out of them.
As one of the best defensive line coaches in the country, Ogeron developed players such as Warren Sapp and Leonard Williams. But his most famous student-athlete didn't turn out to be an NFL player. While at Miami, Ogeron coached a stocky defensive tackle named Dwayne Johnson, who would later take on another life in the WWE ring as The Rock. Bebe was big time, and his friends back home started to notice.
First time he did an autograph for me, I was like, Coach O. And I was kind of like torn a little bit, you know. I was like, what is he doing? And then I realized that's what he went by, this Coach O. So I said, okay, I'm good with it.
His chops as an elite coach and recruiter eventually led Ole Miss athletic director Pete Boone to offer Ed the head coaching job in Oxford. But his first run as an SEC coach was nothing short of a nightmare. Across three seasons, Ole Miss went 10-25 and won only three SEC games. In those years, Ogeron's win total never levitated above four. And in November of 2007, Ogeron was fired. Kevin Groh, however, has a different opinion of Ogeron's time at Ole Miss.
I think maybe he got used to get recruits, because after 3 years, they hired Houston Nutt, and he had successful couple of years with Coach O's recruits. 2 weeks before he got fired, it was in the paper that he was going to stay. And they played in the Egg Bowl, I believe it's not the Egg Bowl, Mississippi State and Ole Miss. And he went for it on fourth down, and they lost the game. Well, the next morning, they fired him.
Stories from his Ole Miss days border on myth. When he was hired, his charm and exuberance for the game were seen as a marked change from the stoic former head coach David Cutcliffe. By the time he was fired, he had been painted as an unhinged wild man by the media and cast off into the dreaded category of assistant coach who perhaps doesn't have what it takes to be the head guy. A lot has been said about Ogeron's time at Ole Miss, but the general consensus is that he tried to do too much.
What can you say that you learned from your stop at Ole Miss that you can, you know, about coaching in the SEC? What can you bring to LSU?
Well, here's the deal. I learned that I can't do it all myself. I tried to do it all myself. I had some young coaches there with me. I wanted to run the USC offense. I mean, that was it. That's all we was going to run. You know, Hugh Freeze was on my staff. No one was on it. They knew the spread. I should have been smart enough to let them run the offense that they want. I tried to do everything myself. And then I realize that I've got to manage the coaches. I can't micromanage them. I got to let them do what they want to do.
After the Ole Miss experience was over, Ogeron bounced around before ending back up at USC as a defensive line coach for the Trojans under head coach Lane Kiffin. After Kiffin was fired 3 years later, Ogeron was promoted to interim head coach. He quickly led USC to a 6-2 mark and was ready to assume the head coaching duties if called upon. But instead, USC chose to hire the bright young head coach at Washington, Steve Sarkisian. Ogeron was crestfallen at his getting passed over, but he wasn't out for the count. Brian Arsenault says that Ole Miss and USC prepared him for the future.
What happened at Ole Miss, he went out and questioned himself. He questioned leaders and guys who been there, and how can I fix it, and how can I do things right. And he went on to SC, and when the opportunity, what happened at Ole Miss, he completely changed his coaching style. You know, he learned from that and learned to be where he could make his team come together. And I think at Ole Miss, the big thing, my son and played strong safety for him. He drove the kids really hard, really hard. And he was close. And he felt like I could do better than this. He told me, and I told him, Butch, I said, baby, I said, man, I said, the stress of being a head coach, all this stuff, that's got to be tough. And man, you crazy. Just say, go get a good job. There's no way, Butch. I'm going to be a head coach again. I'm going to be a head coach in the SEC. And I said to myself, wow, he don't quit.
Ogeron uses another word to describe his experience at USC, humbled.
Well, you know what? Let me say this to you. I had a humbling experience. My most humbling experience was when I didn't win it at Ole Miss and got fired. That was humbling. And then the next thing was when I didn't get the job at USC and the corporate was pulled out from me. And I'm appreciative of Joe leaving the LSU fans. My family took care of me here. I will never forget that.
But Ogeron would live to fight another day and soon got an opportunity of a lifetime to be the defensive line coach under Les Miles at LSU. Things had come full circle, and it was finally time for his triumphant return to the school that he had walked away from decades ago. At LSU, Ogeron was all in, and he quickly became a much-beloved campus figure. This was Ogeron's voicemail from when he first joined the staff.
Hi, this is Coach Ed Ogeron with LSU football. Sorry I can't take your call right now, but I'm out recruiting the best football players in the country for LSU. Hold that tag up.
Bebe was back home in Louisiana, playing for the school he used to root for and coaching some of the most elite athletes in the country. How could it get any better?
There was a point in time when they were going to let Les Miles go at the end of a season 2 years ago, and people thought that was just an horrific thing to do, and it was like Les Miles had all the power because the people really sided in his favor because they just didn't think it was the right thing to do. Then he lost the first game the next year to Wisconsin. It was over. Done. Every call was get rid of him. He's got to go. He said he was going to make changes. No changes were ever made. He's got to go. And shortly thereafter, he was.
On September 25th, 2016, Les Miles was relieved of his position as the head football coach at LSU, ending a 12-year career that saw two national championship game appearances and the second most wins in program history. There was pandemonium among the LSU faithful, who had known nothing but stability and success since Nick Saban took over in 2000. Now it was time for another change, but there were questions about who exactly was the best man for the job. That voice you just heard was Jordy Hultberg, a longtime radio personality in Louisiana. He said that fans were getting desperate enough to do the unthinkable.
I got so many calls. Whatever it takes, let's get Saban back. Yeah, I don't care if it's $10 million. We'll find them. We'll raise the money. We'll get them back. I said, that's great. I'm all for it.
For Ogeron, it was deja vu all over again, as the athletic department made him the acting head coach. He soon brought a new energy and excitement to Baton Rouge by changing up the practice schedule and making football fun again for the players. In his first game, the change was obvious as they racked up 634 total yards against Missouri, the most of any SEC game in Tigers history. During Ogeron's run as interim head coach, the offense was dynamic, something the LSU fans had rarely seen under Les Miles. The Tigers broke LSU's rushing record three different times with two different backs. The 21st century offense had finally come to Baton Rouge, and it was Ed Ogeron, a former defensive line coach, at the helm.
How many years has LSU offensively been in quicksand? And how many times can you watch the game and you're going, oh, it's going to be off tackle. Sure enough, off tackle. Now, if we know it, and we're not studying film 20 hours a day, you don't think the other team knows it? So that's what got so frustrated. There's so much talent, but he Les played not to lose. And Ogeron was going to play to win.
As Bebe continued to win, there was a groundswell of support for the LSU athletic department to take the interim tag off and give him the head coaching job. SDS caught up with Jason Adam, a local tugboat captain in La Rose, who said that the bayou was buzzing as the Tigers reeled off wins.
Were you guys down here rooting for Ed O the whole time to get the job?
Oh, absolutely, man. It was like that was all the talk on the bayou radio down here at KLRZ and the Homer station, you know, like Ed was in the mix, you know.
Brian Arsenault says that support was there much earlier than that, too.
This area supported him from the time that he walked on campus, even as an assistant. But when he was given the opportunity, it was like this whole community came together.
The same LSU fan base that watched Les Miles get carried off the field to a standing ovation less than a year before was now infatuated with Ed Ogeron. To many of the Tiger Tour attendees, however, the Louisiana man persona was a fun story, but wins are all that matter. After all, being a local wasn't a requirement for Les Miles or any other great LSU coach.
Dale Brown wasn't one of us. Bill Ornsparger wasn't one of us. Yeah. Nick Saban wasn't one of us. They were great coaches, and they came to LSU and did great things. I like Ogeron. I'm glad he's one of us. I'm glad I finally got a coach that I can understand when he talks. But he's the best coach available. He's better than Herman. He's better than all of them.
The coaching search rumors swirled, and none of the national pundits were talking about Ed Ogeron. Names flew around like Jimbo Fisher, the former LSU offensive coordinator who led Florida State to a national title in 2013, or Tom Herman, the Houston coach who had stumped Nick Saban's defense as the offensive coordinator at Ohio State. For one reason or another, though, all the university's other options fell through. When the smoke cleared, Ed Ogeron was the last candidate standing. At age 55, Ogeron was offered his dream job to be the head football coach at Louisiana State University. Now that Ogeron is the head man in Baton Rouge, the hard work has officially begun. For some, this job offer could be viewed as a finish line. Ogeron doesn't have that luxury. If he succeeds, he can be the most beloved man in Louisiana sports history. If he fails, he has nowhere to hide from his critics. When you ask Ed Ogeron what his top priority is, he will list standard answers like recruiting top-tier talent and winning football games. But there's an elephant in the head coach's office in Baton Rouge, and it's not white or gray. It's crimson.
How much do LSU fans think about Alabama?
Constantly. Constantly.
It's not thinking about them. It's thinking about beating them.
Ad nauseum. Constantly.
Well, how's that been for the last six tries?
Has it been sickening?
Les Miles was always measured against his predecessor, Nick Saban, during his time as the LSU head coach. During the early years of his tenure, he had the upper hand. When the Tigers won a national championship in 2007, Nick Saban's Alabama team couldn't even beat Louisiana Monroe. But from 2008 to 2015, Les Miles' 2-7 record against their hated rival was one of the leading causes of his firing. Just when LSU appeared to break through with a win in 2011, Saban served Miles the most humiliating loss of his tenure, a 21-0 beatdown in the BCS National Championship game later that year. Since Saban snatched that championship from the Tigers in their own backyard, the purple and gold are winless against Alabama. LSU fans hope that a coaching change to Ogeron could shift the balance of power back to Baton Rouge. And Squat has even higher expectations. He thinks that his friend Bebe has what it takes to make LSU the team to beat in the SEC.
So when, you know, 20 years down the road, what do you guys think Coach O's legacy is going to be?
That he's going to bring LSU back into the, you know, Charlie McClendon days. That's what I see. When Charlie McClendon took the field with LSU, you could feel that energy, that tenacity, that just, I don't know how to explain it, coming onto that field. Tiger Stadium was unbelievable. And that's what he brings back. And that's what LSU has been missing from their greatness. Coach like him.
High expectations are part of the job in Baton Rouge. And the national spotlight doesn't get any brighter than the field lights of Tiger Stadium on a Saturday night. That's why the position was so hard to fill. Nothing would be worse than replacing Les Miles with some hotshot coordinator, only to find that he wasn't ready for the big stage. Whether he knows it or not, Ed Orgeron has been training for this job his whole life. He's seen championship banners raised in the metropolises of Miami and Los Angeles. He's been humbled in the small town of Oxford, Mississippi. Orgeron's path to LSU has crisscrossed the country, but it started in the humble town of La Rose, just over 100 miles from Baton Rouge. Though Bebe's story is far from over, he's already done enough to make his hometown and his family proud.
You know, just for number one, for my mother and my father, for me to be the head coach at LSU would have been utopia. Yeah. I mean, that's something that more than they could ever dream about. But I saw them raise me in the fact that I was able to be the head coach at LSU. I saw them work very hard. I saw them make a lot of sacrifices. And I grew up a rich man in their home. We weren't rich by no means, but they gave me all it takes to have the proper success in life. And, you know, I think by my dad dying early, early age of 70, he would have loved to have this time with his grandchildren. Number one, his grandchildren loved him. They looked up to him. My wife was very close to my father, and we had a great relationship with my mom and dad, so we were very close. It'd have been a dream come true for him to walk into Tiger Stadium, me being the head coach.
From Nacogdoches to New Orleans, the Bayou will always support the first LSU coach without an accent. For Saturday Down South and Stories Down South, I'm Al Blanton.